It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hello, welcome to United Hour, your one-stop shop for all things at Manchester United. I'm your host, Imran.
And I'm Ashwin.
Yep, back with another special Indian Hour for you. That's what you get on the eve of the World Cup. We only bring out this special edition podcast at the specialist of times. We've got a lot to cover, actually, in this podcast. We'll go talk about the Fulham game. There's obviously the Ronaldo stuff, which we unfortunately have to talk about. And then we might do a little bit of World Cup previewing, as we've got an Englishman and an American here, so we can talk a bit about that. There'll be no time to talk about England's magnificent T20 World Cup win, but you know that can
we don't want to talk about that right now.
There you go. Magnificent win. United won 2-1 at Fulham. Takes into the break. People keep saying mid-season break. It's actually like a third season break. A lot of football still to go. I think we've played like 16 games or something like that, 15 in the league. So it's quite a lot of games to go. It's not quite halfway. But yeah, it signed off in a good way with Garnacho winning the game right at the end. It could have been really... I was just thinking on the way into injury time, like if we don't score and we go into the break with a 1-1 draw against Fulham, that's like a long month. But that one goal makes it all a lot better, doesn't it?
It does. I hate this break. Like, I hate that it's happening at the moment it's happening, because it feels as if, like, I mean, I guess, well, there's the Ronaldo of it all, but forgetting that for right now, just it does feel like the squad is coming together, and especially like with Garnacho coming on, I feel like it's the worst time break for him, especially because it feels like there's some real momentum for him and the squad in general, and it just feels like a very annoying time for this break to come up for us.
I don't know if I agree, actually. I think there's definitely teams who would be like Arsenal, for instance, terrible time for them to have a break when you're on that sort of form. Us, I'm not sure. I think it's an okay time. Garnacho, yeah, he's hitting form, but also it gives him he's not going to the World Cup or anything. It gives him a lot of time to work with Ten Hag. We know Ten Hag's been a bit critical openly about his attitude. Like, you'd think, okay, it's a good month to get work down. It's another month to knuckle down and, you know, work hard and stuff with Ten Hag, and he can have that a lot more hands-on coaching, I guess, because there's a lot less players within the camp. And also in terms of the Ronaldo thing, it actually gives us a month without him stinking up our forward line, and then we might be able to actually buy a striker in January a lot sooner than we would be if we had all these games between now and January. So I don't think it's the worst time for us. And it's not like we're in blistering form or anything. We just beat Fulham.
Yeah, we're not in blistering form or anything. But I do think that, like, there is something building there. I mean, we had only lost once in our last however many matches. And, I mean, that was the Villa match, which was just a weird... I mean, that was... You guys talked about it. It was just... That was probably the worst Ten Hag match, probably.
I don't know. Brentford 4-0 is hard to beat.
It is, but that wasn't like so much about the team selection, right? Like, there wasn't so many issues with teams. That was, you know, what are you going to do if De Gea gives away two goals and then you're automatically starting from way behind? But I think, like, since in this most recent run, you know, since that point, it felt like the one match where he picked a team that you were just like, yeah, I don't know what we could have possibly expected here other than this. Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily the worst time. I just think that, like, when you are starting, like, even in this Fulham match, right, we didn't dominate it. I thought in the second half especially they came onto us, and defensively we were, I don't want to say all over the place, but I think it was less so much that we were bad defensively and more that we were just very sloppy in possession, which created problems for us defensively. But, like, you know, that was a match where we actually created a lot of chances. Obviously, we only scored twice, which was enough. But it's like we've seen more matches recently where we're creating chances. And obviously, we have not found form in front of goal yet. But, like, when you're starting to create chances, that's, I think, a really good sign. And I think it's not, again, it's not the worst. You're right. It's not the worst time. But it is frustrating because you feel like, you know, are you going to be able to generate the same type of chances and have the same cohesiveness when everybody comes back from the World Cup? At this, like, to your point, though, I mean, that's something that every team is going to be dealing with, right? It's not just United. So we'll see. I mean, I do think, like, you know, there's also just the fact that Martial hopefully won't get hurt in the interim time.
You never know.
Yeah, you never know. And, you know, hopefully, you know, Rashford, Antony, like, especially in the attacking ranks, I think that's where we really can't afford to lose.
Martial's not going to the World Cup, at least, but that still doesn't escape him getting hurt. You get hurt walking down the street, Martial. Right. But I just think on the league table of best time for a break and worst time for a break, I think we're somewhere in the middle. I think, like, we're not Arsenal, Newcastle, really. You just want to keep that momentum.
Oh, yeah.
We're not
for Newcastle, it's the worst.
We're not Chelsea either, where the break is probably coming at a great time for them to work with Potter and get all these ideas maybe and just take a break from shit football. But yeah, we did get the 3 points against Fulham. Ten Hag was going on about how important this game was for us to get that win, and we did get it right at the end. Like you said, not a game we dominated. First half, we should have been 2 or 3 up, it's fair to say. Eriksen did score the goal, but also had a great chance at the end. Martial had a couple. And it's really a kind of game where you think if that's 2-0 going into the break, you don't see a way back for Fulham. But 1-0 obviously gave them the impetus to get back into the game, and we kind of let them by being so open. Just on the lineups, the only real big thing here was Lindelof starting ahead of Maguire and Malacia playing at right back when he's obviously a left back. Other than that, pretty much expected team. Okay, Javi Langer at right wing, but our right wing options are fairly limited, and you can see why he actually didn't start Garnacho, because you can bring him off the bench to do that sort of thing. And plus, if you put either him or Rashford on the right, it limits them a bit. Not that Rashford had a great game on left or anything, but I can see why he's picking Langer there. Did you have any problems with any of those things?
No, I thought Langer was, you know, he was a Langer. Like, he's exactly what I expected him to be. Not particularly great, not particularly dangerous, but and he also, like, he didn't do a great job protecting Malacia, who I thought had a pretty rough go with it because Willian apparently turned back the clock. But, you know, all you're asking for really is, like, an honest effort, you know, and you can't expect too much more than that from him. And that's, you know, ultimately that's why, like, I think within a year or two, Alonso will probably not be at United anymore. But for what you needed in this match, I was fine with it. And I also, like, you know, I think there's value in keeping some firepower on the bench, which obviously paid off in the end, because, like, you want the ability to really change a match and give yourself options off the bench versus purely just, okay, I have to play all my best attackers right now. And if you think about it, if we had started Garnacho, right, that would have meant Rashford plays on the right or Garnacho plays on the right. Neither of them is as effective in those positions. So, like, I think it makes complete sense. I was fine with it. And, you know, I think also to some extent we've seen Ten Hag be very, he's not been effusive in his praise of Garnacho publicly. I think there's obviously, like, there's also these reports about he was kind of late for a bunch of meetings during preseason and all that stuff. So I think it's about, you know, keeping him grounded. So I do think, like, there's some of that going on at play too, where it's like, yeah, like, you're great. You're doing great for us, but you're coming off the bench, bud.
I do. I also kind of like it in the sense that you play Garnacho from the start. Like, it gives their fullback a chance to, like, size him up over 90 minutes. And we saw him start against Villa, and he wasn't probably his least impactful player for us. Obviously, there's a lot more factors going into that. It was just a bad team performance on the day. But Yeah, you give their fullback from the first minute to kind of size him up, get the better of him, put some kicks in there, and when they're both fresh, where you bring him off the bench and he starts running him straight away against a tired defender, it's a lot more of a challenge for him. And I think that's where we saw against Villa, Garnacho really shone there, coming on against tired legs, and here again, coming against tired legs. It just puts him straight into the thrust of the game, doesn't give the defender much chance to size him up, and his panic stations are ready for them. And kind of as soon as he got the ball, he just started running at them, and it paid the difference in the end. One thing I would say about Elanga is at least he does offer pace, and it does kind of make them worry a bit down that right. Not that he's quality or anything shines through, but he is some sort of threat where you can just bang a ball over to that side of the pitch, and they're sort of worried about him running in behind.
Yeah, and he made a run at the start of the second half where he got in behind. He got a shot which rebounded, went right to Rashford. Rashford, I mean, you could say he's unlucky or he should finish it, whatever, but it was a good opportunity, but it happened because Elanga made a run and put a shot on target. So, again, is he perfect and is he going to be a long-term player for us or solution to anything? Probably not, but you're not... Like, you're in a position right now where you just need some guys to come in and eat minutes and give you something, and he did that. And then, you know, I think there are people that I've seen just be, like, overly critical of him, and it's like, if you kind of just expect... We just need to have realistic expectations of him. He's not going to be a first-team player, I don't think. So once you realize that you're just using him as a squad player for right now because of the limitations of the squad that Ten Hag inherited, I think it's fine. And he's an honest player. He gives you good effort, and that's all you can ask for, especially from these academy players that are being asked to step up, you know, in a moment of need.
Yeah, and quickly on Malacia, obviously playing out of position and probably played about as well as you could expect a young left back to play at right back to do. It did kind of show how important Dalot is. Mm-hmm. To us, and I've been saying this, I think Shaw and Dalot are massively integral to how we build our play. The fact is that most any time we built in this game mostly came down our left hand side because Shaw starts it, and their calmness on the ball, their technique, they're actually like both, they're decent on the ball, and it kind of just pushes us up the field, and but a lot of our attacks start from those positions. So I think we did miss Dalot in that regard. Also defensively, Dalot is very good. Starting to become very good, and we did have a bit of a tough time, as you said, down that side. But yeah, like I said, we dominated the first half mainly. Got the goal through Eriksen after a Bruno deflected assist, but it was a good win in the middle from Casemiro, and Eriksen got his first goal for the club, which was very nice to see. Very wholesome moment. I don't think anyone had nothing but a smile on their face when they saw Eriksen scoring.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good goal, I thought, too. He worked it well. I think Casemiro won the ball, and then goes to Bruno. Bruno plays it to, you know...
Went to Martial. Martial played it to Bruno. Bruno played it to Bosch.
Yeah, and I think Bruno was shooting it. I'm pretty sure he was shooting it, but...
He was passing. I think he was passing. Actually, I don't know, because the deflection was quite big, so maybe he was shooting. Who knows?
It looked like one of those, like, cross shot type of things where you're just like, I'll just put it in the area and let's see what happens. But, I mean, it was a good movement, and... Yeah, I mean, it was like... Eriksen has been in and around the area for goals, so it was just nice to see him get one finally. But yeah, I mean, I thought we played very well to start the match, and I thought that goal was probably, I mean, it was just about deserved. And then, like, you know, the better part of the goal too, I think, is that, like, and of course, we didn't score again. But I thought we actually played really well after the goal. It wasn't like we scored the goal and then we just sat back and, you know, were in a shell. But we were going forward. We were attacking. We were creating chances. Martial probably should have at least bagged one. But, like, you know, that's the type of momentum you want to see, because we've seen far too often before where it's like you score a goal and you think, okay, now let's kick on in this match, and it doesn't happen, right? And so to see that, especially because I don't think we've been scoring. I mean, we haven't been scoring a lot to begin with, but we also haven't scored early very often. So to kind of see, like, okay, score early, and now we keep going, I thought that was encouraging also.
Hmm. Yeah, deserved. And then, like I said, Eriksen probably should have got another right at the end of the half, and that really would have killed the game. Second half started, and then Fulham really got back into it. I don't know whether that's just they had the impetus or we dropped off a bit. It just felt like we got a bit sloppy in possession, to be honest with you. And especially, like, there wasn't a lot of movement really going on. I think the commentators picked up at one point that Mr. Martinez and Casemiro both had the ball between them and just no one was moving ahead of them, and then just one of them lumped it because not really much was going on. But they got back into it. James coming on with his pace helped them. And he got the goal, obviously. I think when he played for Leeds against us, he got an assist, and now he's got a goal. His first goal for Fulham, because, you know, people have to raise the game against us when they used to play for us. But it's fine. You know, we won the game. Who cares? The goal kind of comes about because Bruno keeps the ball in play. I'm not going to be too harsh on him there. Like, he's trying to keep the ball in play, trying to keep good things going.
I saw people criticizing Malacia for that too, and I just think, like, he is running up there because he thinks Bruno's going to keep it in. He's trying to give him support. People are like, oh, he's out of position. I don't know. Like, I can kind of understand it, but I just think it's sometimes it just weird shit happens, and like that was one of those. You know, I think even in our Discord, I was like, what the hell is Bruno doing? But then, like, you watch it back and you're like, yeah.
He's keeping the ball in play.
Yeah,
you know, like,
yeah, it happens.
There's a lot of things about the goal that both aren't great, but they're not like the worst offense in the world. Like, even like Lindelof coming across to block the cross is a bit slow. He doesn't make himself very big. Makes the cross coming in easier. Shaw's not really done a great job tracking. De Gea, not even going to save, really. If he's maybe down at his feet, he blocks. Yeah. Like, if he's like making himself big at the feet, he blocks it. None of it's particularly great, but I don't think any of it's heinous crimes.
See, sometimes you just concede. Like, that, yeah. It is what it is. Like, I don't know. Like, that was not a goal where I like watched it back and I'm like, oh my god, look at this horrendous thing that occurred. It was just like you mentioned. It's like, yeah. I mean, could you say this could be better? That could be better. This could, yeah, of course. But like, it's mostly just that all of that came together in one exact precise moment that you conceded. It wasn't because, you know, there was some huge error on our part.
Yeah. And then they really were on top then after that. James was actually causing a bit of problems with his pace. Thankfully his final delivery is shit.
What did you think of McTominay's header from the 18 yard line?
Well, I was going to get to that, but you mean his face? It wasn't even a header, it just hit him in the face, didn't it? Terrible miss. Our headers are either really good or really shit. There's no one in between. But yeah, McTominay came on. Sad thing about that was he played a cracking pass at the beginning of that move.
Yeah, he did.
And then made the run all the way into the box. And you think if he scored that, that's a brilliant goal that like is a lot down to him, but yeah, terrible. I was actually going to ask you how you thought Martinez acquitted himself against James, because I mean, I'm not even remotely going to blame him for not keeping pace with Dan James, because, you know, how can you? I don't expect many people in the league, apart from maybe Kyle Walker, to keep pace with Dan James. But I actually thought he did all right. Like, he acquitted himself quite well against, like, raw pace. And we know pace isn't his strong point, but he still had that grit determination that we come to see about him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was okay. Like, I didn't... If you're committing numbers forward and you leave space in behind, we know the one thing Dan James can do is can carry the ball into space. I didn't think he had a particularly, like, he created one chance, which I think Lindelof put out of touch for a corner. But other than that, I mean, look, he scored the goal. That wasn't really on Martinez to me. I think that, like you mentioned, like that was way more on Shaw. But even then, it's just like, again, the ball comes into a dangerous area. It's also in that weird area between your back line and the goalie. So you're like, it's kind of an uncomfortable position to be in. I don't really put blame on anybody for that too much. And then other than that, I thought Martinez was fine. Like, yeah, he struggled a bit with his pace, but, you know, he's rapid. And if you leave space in behind and you're committing numbers forward and your left back is up, you know, he's caught up the field, so you're one-on-one. Yeah, like, you might have to force him out wide and give him that space, and I think that's generally what he did. But I didn't feel like Dan James was singularly causing us problems. I thought we were really bad in possession. I would love to just blame it on one person or two people, but I thought it was like a collective lack of preciseness, especially in midfield. Like, I thought Casemiro was really sloppy in the second half. I thought Eriksen was sloppy. Bruno was Bruno-ing.
Yeah, I mean, once Bruno went out to the right wing, that kind of changed it for us a lot.
Yeah, I don't like it. Like, I And I get why he made a change. Like, I get, like, if you're trying to make a change, that's a reasonable one. I really don't like Bruno on the right. I don't think he plays great there. And more than that, I think it totally nullifies us as an attacking threat in a lot of ways, because we just don't have creativity, or we don't have that drive in the center of the pitch. And I think that's a really big problem. I know, you know, yes, McTominay did play, like, you're right, he played a great pass, probably should have scored a header. And if he does that, maybe I'm saying something entirely different. But I think we've seen a few matches now where he moves Bruno to the right. And, you know, look, he puts in the work there. He tracks back. He definitely works. But, like, as how it impacts us overall, I don't particularly like it. I don't feel great about it. So, I don't know. I get, like, again, this is kind of, like, what you have to do when you don't have quality and depth that you would ideally like to have. But you know, if there's a way to avoid that, and maybe it's as simple as Antony gets healthy and after the World Cup and he comes back, and maybe it's that simple. But yeah, like in the intermediate time, I get it. I just don't particularly love it.
We're gonna take a quick break now, and then when we get back, we'll talk about the Garnacho show at the end.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. So yeah, this game, actually, honestly, when it was counting down, I did feel like it was petering out to a 1-1 draw. You get the sense in games that we're actually going to score here, but I was not getting that sense at all from this game. I don't know about you. And then it kind of just came out of nowhere. The goal, we were building from the left, Eriksen ran forward. Great 1-2 with Garnacho, lovely pass from Eriksen. But even then, Garnacho to actually get on that ball. So incredible skip speed. He had like a jetpack on him or something, and a great finish. Genuinely came out of nowhere. Lost my mind. How good a goal was that?
Thought it was a great goal. It was an interesting goal too, because I didn't think, when Eriksen played the pass in first time, I was like, that it's too far. Like it's, you know, it's either going to go out of touch, or goalie's going to come out and get it, or the defender's going to touch it out first. Like I didn't think he was going to get there, but he's just so fast. Like he's just so rapid, and he made up the yards. It was kind of stunning to see. It was, and then, I mean, the first time finish, left foot across his body, thought it was great. Thought it was a great, great goal, great finish, obviously a great moment for us. And I actually thought he did well in the initial buildup to even just keep, not just keep the ball in, but take his first touch forward so he could run onto it and keep the pressure on, keep the momentum going. Because he's like, he receives the ball basically on the touchline. You know, it's literally he's standing on the touchline. Any type of shaky touch there, it slows the entire move down, or maybe it just goes out of play. So I thought Garnacho did well on both counts, obviously finishing the goal and then obviously just keeping it in. So I thought that was really, really good. And I think it says a lot that he had the confidence there to just take the shot, because if you watch it back, Rashford is like, he's on the 6-yard line basically. Like he's there for a cutback. And I can just imagine if he takes that shot, he misses it, you know, Rashford's going to be losing his mind. Maybe, and I think Bruno is actually like in a pretty decent spot too, where he's like following up on the far side of the goal essentially. So not just the fact that he got into the position, but the execution and then the confidence to even take it says a lot about him. So yeah, I mean, it's the best possible way to go into this break, I think.
Yeah, it's it really changed the whole mood around the break, going in with that 3 points.
I was
going to
be miserable. I was going to be so miserable if we dropped points, because Chelsea lose, right? Liverpool, so Chelsea is, I think they're on 21 points now. Liverpool have started to be good again. So like they had won, and if you draw there, you're only two ahead of them, and then you've lost even more ground to Newcastle, who just apparently are the best team in the entire world. Spurs came back, they won 4-3. Like there, so you have some of these results going against you or creating pressure. So to get all 3 points at the very end is, yeah, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it really does change the whole, it changes everything, really, just that one goal. I think we'd be, the whole podcast would sound a lot different if we didn't score right at the end. And yeah, Garnacho, obviously, what a talent. Who knows what the limit is for him, but we have to manage him well. I'm sure Erik ten Hag will as well, keep him on the ground. And I expect a lot more from him as we go forward, a lot more cameo appearances, more goals. Obviously, like, won't go all his way all the time. He's a young player. Shit will happen, but yeah, obviously he's got a lot about him. And yeah, that puts us in fifth, 3 points behind Spurs, but with the game in hand. So top four, certainly on the cards. It's not the halfway point, we said, but halfway point analysis. What grade are you giving us?
B+.
Yeah, I would go with a B.
Yeah, that's fine.
Obviously some terrible at the start. I mean, the thing is, if you took away those two abominations of games at the start, replace them with like normal game. But if those two games happen somewhere in this run, we don't obviously lose both of them. I don't think we lose either of them, actually. If you put them somewhere, maybe we lose one of them, but whatever. But we definitely don't lose both, and the season is a bit better then. We also should have really won against Newcastle. I keep thinking about that Newcastle game, thinking we really should have won that game.
Oh my god, it's such a killer, because that's a 4-point swing essentially, right?
Yeah, it's massive, and then that one still bugs me. But yeah, we're in touching distance of the top four. That's all we can really ask for, especially after the start we made. Things are coming together. The spirit's good. There's obviously some issues that we're going to talk about now. But overall, yeah, about a B sounds about right. Also, one good trait is we've not, every time we've taken the lead, we've won the game this season, which is quite a good little trait to have.
Yeah, there's definitely some resilience in this team, like for sure. It doesn't feel as kind of...
Yeah, we're not throwing away games. The issue comes when we go behind. Only times we've got points when we've gone behind is Everton, who scored early, and then Chelsea actually at the end. That was quite a lot of resilience there. But generally, when we go behind, that's kind of the game for us. So we need to work on that. But yeah, we're building a good team. You would have hope for, we've got a decent-ish run actually when we get back. I think we're playing Forest, Wolves, and Bournemouth, so it's quite a gentle start. That's before the League Cup game against Burnley. Before we talk about the Ronaldo stuff, let's just quickly talk about the League Cup game against Villa. 4-2, dreadful first half, brilliant second half. It felt very League Cup, though. The whole thing felt very Carabao. I don't think you would get that game in the league, and I can't tell you why. There was an air of madness about it, and shittery, that felt so League Cup. But anyway, it was a good win, 4-2, especially after we went behind. Again, good resilience to get back into the game. Thought Rashford was excellent. His goal was really good. And once again, Garnacho came on and just a beautiful assist for McTominay. An assist for Bruno as well, with Tyron Mings flying around the place. Any quick thoughts from that game?
What a pass. What a pass from Garnacho. That was...
Keeper should be all over that, to be fair. That's what I would say.
He should come off the line, but it's to even have the... If you never make the pass, right, you don't have the chance. So, to even have that. And I thought that was a great finish by McTominay, too, to get on the end of it. You know who doesn't make that? Ronaldo. Yeah, Ronaldo doesn't get there. It was a fun match, you know? It was like, especially, it was so funny, because the first half was maybe the most boring 45 minutes you could ever imagine of a football match. But the second half was just... The entire 45 minutes was just completely mad. I think you're right. Like, you wouldn't get that in the Premier League or Champions League or Euro. Like, it just wouldn't be that chaotic. But because it's a cup match, and because both teams, like, it's kind of weird, right? It's one of those where, because it's a cup match, both teams are just trying to win. There's no like, oh, we're happy with a draw here, we're happy with a point, or
and neither team really felt afraid of losing. Like if you lose, it's not the biggest deal in the world. And I think that kind of contributed to it as well. We are through to the next round of the Cup. We're playing Burnley. That is like 3 days after the World Cup final, so it'll be interesting to see who is even around for that game. Burnley also flying in the Championship top under Vincent Kompany, so that'll be a decent challenge at Old Trafford, but that's a long time away. Before then, we've got a World Cup, which we will talk about, but first we'll talk about Cristiano Ronaldo and his wonderful interviews. Yep, you probably heard all about it by now, so I don't really need to recap, but in case you haven't, in case you live under a rock, Cristiano Ronaldo decided to buddy up with his best mate, Piers Morgan. By the way, like, if you're thinking, you know what, I need an interview. It says a lot about you that you pick Piers Morgan to be the guy to interview you, really. I don't know who you pick instead, but definitely not Piers Morgan. But anyway, he's come out with some choice quotes. Obviously, this is against the club's, not cleared by the club, not a club-sanctioned interview. Obviously, with the content of the interview, you can see why he's laid into... Well, first, the big headline is that he has said he has no respect for Erik ten Hag because Erik ten Hag has no respect for him. I think if you take that out of the interview, it's bad, but I don't think it's as bad. I think as soon as he starts slagging off the manager, then it's beyond reproach for me. Like,
yeah, I mean that's the entire problem with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like because okay, he rips the Glazers. Great, fantastic. We're all on board with that.
I mean, from a club standpoint, that wouldn't fly. The fact that he's done an unsanctioned interview, not great. The fact that he is, even if it's true, even if we all know the training facilities aren't great, the jacuzzi's not great. I really want to see the state of this jacuzzi, by the way. Yeah.
Do you think it's possible to win the Premier League without, you know, a new jacuzzi every couple of years?
I mean, I don't think it is. You know, I think you need high-end jacuzzis to win the Premier League. That's what they say at City. But yeah, it's not great if he's like saying these things in public and saying the Glazers don't care about the club. From a club standpoint, from a fan standpoint, I don't think many people care other than the fact that he's going against clubs which to do this.
Right.
And it's not great. But the Ten Hag stuff really takes it way over the edge. And at that point, there's no way back for him. I mean, there's no way he can play for us again now, is there?
I don't think he's planning on it. I think that the entire interview is done so that he has to go. And I think, like, I'm not sure.
Well, that's his whole motive, isn't it?
Yes. Well, and I don't know look, I'm not a lawyer. And I definitely am not familiar with UK law or European law. But, like, I think I was listening to the United podcast that The Athletic has, and I think they were suggesting that if he did, like, the fact that he did go after the Glazers, that would potentially open up the possibility for United to terminate his contract. So, I mean, that could be just the entire purpose. But yeah, I mean, I don't really care about the rest of it. But once you go after Ten Hag and what he's talking about, you know, respect doesn't respect me, so I don't. What are you talking about? Like, you, this entire idea that the club has not respected Ronaldo or Ten Hag has not respected Ronaldo is quite frankly absurd. You know, look, he apparently had some issue with his daughter or something, so which is why he missed out on preseason. The club was okay with that, right? They didn't say anything. I think the only thing Ten Hag said is, you know, basically that because he missed that part of the preseason, it was hard to, you know, he couldn't just throw him in and he needed time to build up his fitness and get, you know, that's fine. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that. And he's played a lot. He's played a lot. And yeah, you can tell me that's because of injuries and okay, but that's the manager's prerogative. And like, you know, I think it's funny because Ronaldo, like, there was a point in his career where no manager would ever drop him, right? You would never drop Ronaldo. But now he's at the point in his career where he actually has to fight for his spot because he's not that level anymore. He's not just automatically thrown into the team anymore. And he's kind of bristling at it, having to earn his keep, which I find funny. But, you know, like, if we're being, you know, then he's talking about, like, oh, I did this for the fans need to know all the, you know, all the terrible things that are happening inside the club. And it's like, you didn't tell us anything that we didn't already know. Like, there have already been many protests about, you know, the Glazers and how they've run things. And, you know, we knew that the state of the jacuzzi wasn't great. We knew all these things, right? He didn't air anything in this entire interview, at least from what has been leaked out so far, that we didn't already know. And then, you know, again, like, to go after Ten Hag, I just thought that was in such poor taste. And quite frankly, I don't think it's just the supporters that he would have lost there. I mean, I'm sure that you can still be friends with Ronaldo. I'm sure many of the players in our squad are still friendly with him. But as far as a professional relationship, I mean, that's, you know, he may as well have. I mean, he killed it, right? He buried himself there, because I think it's obvious that everybody at the club and most of the players at the club are behind Ten Hag and backing Ten Hag. So for him to come out and say what he did, yeah, you're right. There is no way back for him. And if we're being completely honest, that isn't necessarily the worst thing that I would have hoped for. I'm actually quite pleased about that.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird. Like, you should have done this interview. It's very, it's annoying that he said these things about Ten Hag, but the end result is that he'll never play for us again. And that end result is quite good. Like, it's quite good that he'll be out in January, as opposed to us thinking maybe he'll have to stay till the end of the summer. The fact that he's almost like 99% going to be gone in January, and then we're going to probably have to buy a striker if the club has any sense about it, which, you know, they might not have any sense, but I mean, that's a pretty net positive thing. So I can't help but be kind of happy about it. And look, you cannot just say you don't respect the manager and expect to stay around. He knows what he's doing. He wants to leave the club. He wanted to leave in the summer. He wants to leave now. Fine. There's better ways to go about it, but if you've chosen this way, whatever. As long as he leaves, I don't really care. I'm glad that he's named the Glazers. Like, yeah, I don't think the intentions are above board. I don't think he's that bothered. I think it's more
He doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't care. It's just a make good and more things to slag off. But the fact that the Glazers' name is being brought up with shit going on at the club by the world's most famous footballer can't be a bad thing. Like, I'll happily take any criticism of the Glazers in an open forum. Fine with that. The stuff on Rangnick is funny, if not a bit unprofessional. Same with Rooney. Like, I mean, it's all, it comes across a bit pathetic, really. And it's
the
a bit
Rooney
tarnishing
stuff
of
is especially pathetic, because it's like, what are you even talking about? Are you,
I mean,
are you bragging about
sad.
The fact that
it's a bit sad?
Are you
like, it's like,
are you bragging?
Child?
Are you bragging that you're more attractive than Wayne Rooney? Like,
I don't know. Rooney's hair transplant has done wonders for him, I think. Is it I was watching that Rooney documentary on Amazon. Like, if you compare him now to him at 18, it's night and day, really.
Yeah. And I think, to your point, like, all the stuff he said, I mean, it's very small, and it's also like, he's so mad at Rooney and Neville because he's acting like they owe him something. Like, like, okay, you can say, we talked about this in our chat, but it's like, yeah, maybe Rooney shouldn't be talking about United so much. But he didn't say anything that offensive about Ronaldo. He basically just said, like, he has to earn his place in the team. That's more or less what he said, that he's not at that level anymore where he's just going to be granted a space. Like, he has to actually earn his place in the team and keep it and take his chances. And Neville is literally a pundit. Like, he's, and I don't think we all have eyes. Anybody that's watching these matches and is walking away thinking, oh yeah, no, Ronaldo got to be in the team, he's just giving him, like, that is, I mean, I don't even know, like, you want people to be delusional, I guess, but like, the fact of the matter is, he went after two players who have been, I guess you could say, critical of him, and then he went out of his way to
critical of him personally, just
professionally,
just football-wise, professionally, yeah.
And then he goes out of his way to be like, oh yeah, Roy Keane, best captain I had, Rio Ferdinand, we were neighbors, and it's just like, so basically, if you only say great positive things about Ronaldo, you're wonderful. If you criticize him at all, then he's gonna try to like bury you. I don't know. It's all nonsense.
It's just very, very childish at the end of the day. And I mean, it's been badly managed by him. I don't know what PR people are telling him, but I can't see how this was a good move before or after any time. Piers Morgan's the icing on the cake of it as well. But yeah, net result, he'll be gone. And I think you got to be happy about that. We generally this season look better without him. He looks like a finished property. And really, all this is just a response to him not being able to handle the fact that he's no longer a starter. It's probably him acting out the fact that he's no longer the footballer he was, and, you know, time catches up with everyone and time has caught up with him. The one weird thing from all of this that I keep thinking about is he was captain against Aston Villa.
Yeah.
So how did that conversation go between Erik ten Hag making him captain and him accepting the captaincy? I don't get it. Like,
I want to know when he did this interview.
I mean, he did it after the Villa game. Thursday, I think.
That's bizarre.
Or Friday night or something.
So after the League Cup game.
Yep, after the League Cup game, apparently, which he was quote-unquote ill for, and he did it after the Villa captaincy game. So the last time he played for United, he was the captain. At what point Ten Hag had to go on to say, "You're captain tonight"? I mean, surely he has respect for him if he's captaining him. And then... But it's baffling, weird behaviour from Ronaldo, because at one point does want to come on against City when we're losing 6-3, but ultimately doesn't want to come onto the pitch at other times as a sub either.
He's left a match early twice now. One in preseason, one obviously the Spurs.
One time he'd finished. I mean, not great the first preseason. It's preseason. He'd already played whatever, but it's still not great. Obviously not great. Leaving when you have been asked to come on the pitch is terrible. Like, absolutely terrible. Ten Hag still made him captain, and he still came out and said he has no respect for him. So, yeah. Ultimately, I think with most United fans at the moment, there's only going to be one winner out of Ten Hag and Ronaldo. In fact, Ten Hag and any player, I think everyone's fully behind Ten Hag. I don't think anyone's going to side over players with Ten Hag at the moment. The players don't have that goodwill in the bank that Ten Hag has as our new manager. So the question is, he goes in, Jan. Do you think United will buy a replacement, and who should it be?
If he goes in January, I don't think we'll buy a replacement. But if we were to buy a replacement, I would definitely like it to be Ivan Toney. He'd be fun. I think, you know, he's just the one that comes to mind because it feels like that's achievable in January. Mm. I think he gives us an option to be more direct also, which I like. He's like physically, obviously, you know that he can handle the physicality of the Premier League, all that type of stuff. He presses. I don't know. I just think like it makes a lot of sense on paper if that was the move that we made. But I really don't think we're going to do anything in January.
I mean, it's a bit of an issue if we don't, because we are so light on strikers and Martial is made of, well, cardboard. But like I said, Toney could be achievable, but it would cost a lot of money. Like to Brentford, he's definitely worth 70, 80 million pounds, whatever. Other options out there are Osimhen, Rafael Leao.
But Osimhen, like, there's no chance he's leaving in January.
There's no chance. Yeah. Leao, there's no chance. The only other name I could think of, I believe Jonathan David's contract is out at the end of the season.
So you could sign him on a pre-contract?
You just give him some money for him, because they'll lose him for free otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
That might be totally wrong that he's not out of contract. But again, that's not a guaranteed thing. Like, buying someone from the French league to come here, even though I'm a big fan of his, I actually think he's a good player, but buying someone out of the French league to come be your number nine, bit of a risk, I think. Obviously, Tony's a bit much more of a short thing. Actually, forget about that. Apparently, his contract ends in 2025. So what a load of bullshit that was.
I think the other one I've seen is...
scratch that whole thing out.
Yeah. There's another one I've seen of Vlahovic, right, at Juventus. See, yeah. Actually, that might be possible. Because Juventus, they're obviously out of Europe entirely, I think. And then they're financially not in a great position. They're not exactly getting great return on investment on Pogba so far. The thing is, though, they're in third place right now in Serie A. That's a pretty tight race. They're on 31 points. Lazio's on 30. Inter's on 30. Atalanta, Roma are on 27. So that's, like, pretty jumbled up. I don't know if they would risk giving up Vlahovic. And to be honest, I'm not exactly sure how good Vlahovic even is. But he is a name that I've seen us linked with. And for all those reasons, like financial and all that stuff, I could see that happening. And it might be... Mm. And look, we know this last year. Last year, they sold Spurs, Kulusevski, and Bentancur in January, which, you know, whatever I think of Spurs, I think both those players have been really good for them. I think Kulusevski's... I love him. He's so much fun to watch. But, like, they... So they have recently sold and done business in January. So I think that seems possible, I think.
Mm. But really what we all know is United will just loan an old person.
Yes.
We'll get Ighalo back in. Yeah, or Javier Hernandez, or is it Antonio Cassano knocking around? He sounds like he's due a time in England.
Should we bring Bebe back?
We'll probably loan Alvaro Morata, because he is continually linked with us.
Where is he now?
He's at Atletico Madrid, I believe.
Would you take it if they were just like, we'll give you him on loan for...
Yeah, I mean, better than nothing, isn't it?
I think I would do that. I would be fine with that.
Better than nothing.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, I'm very concerned. Going into the back end of the season with just Antonio Martial? Do you reckon it'd be better if it was called Antonio Martial?
Should we just buy Michele Antonio? Is that what you're saying?
God. Oh, dear. So, going into the back end of the season with Martial and Rashford as our two striking options, it doesn't really speak to me. So I do think we'll need to reinforce, but I don't think the club will want to spend money to do it. But we'll see. It's a long time away. Before that, there's a big fat tournament called the World Cup, and after this break, we'll just talk a bit about it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back. So the World Cup starts next Sunday in Qatar. Qatar versus Ecuador is the first game. Ashwin, how excited are you for the World Cup?
I'm definitely excited to watch, but just feels weird, right? I mean, there's like obviously all the circumstances around Qatar getting the World Cup and how the stadiums are built and all that is there, and then it's just like it's weird because it doesn't feel like there's any build up to this, right? Because it's just like, okay, league kind of took a break after Sunday, and now in a week's time we're going to be playing World Cup matches. It just doesn't feel like there's build up, but I am excited. I think it'll be I wonder if it'll be more random than usual, just because it is in the middle of the season and there hasn't been much ramp up time. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but I am excited because we have Group B is a very interesting group, and I'm excited to watch the Group B matches.
Yeah, I mean, the World Cup is my favorite thing in sport, in football, in anything. I love the World Cup. I think it's brilliant. Try to consume of it as much as possible. I'll be doing the same. The circumstances behind Qatar getting the World Cup are dreadful. The circumstances going on in Qatar since the World Cup are even worse. However, this World Cup should never have happened, right? Mm. Never have happened. Should have been stopped. They should never have got it in the first place. And once they did get it, it should have been stopped a long time ago. That has not happened. And I don't feel like the incompetency of other people should stop me from enjoying what is my favorite competition. That's kind of where I'm not boycotting it. I will be watching it. I can understand why people want to boycott it. I just don't see what boycotting achieves at this point. It's going to happen. It's going to be on TV. It's not going to stop. But if you are boycotting it, more play to you. Like, fair enough. I will be watching, and I will enjoy it. It will be interesting, actually. You don't get World Cups. We've never had a World Cup like this, where players technically should be in their peak of form. Like, everyone should be at full fitness. There shouldn't be any slow betting in periods. Everyone should be raring to go. So that'll be interesting. England's group with Iran, USA and Wales is an interesting group. England going in on poor form. we'll concentrate on that. We've got an American and English person here, so we might as well start there. So how do you feel about the USMNT's chances for the tournament? I assume he's born in America, by the way.
I don't feel great about it. I didn't really like the squad they picked. I thought that they should have taken Pepe, who's been very good for them. I'm not sure why he didn't go. So, yeah, I mean, our center halves are a disaster.
Big Tim Ream's not there, is he?
No, he is. He's there. Okay, so Tim Ream is there. But it's like the other center halves at our disposal are Cameron Carter-Vickers. I think he was Spurs legend, Cameron Carter-Vickers. The defense is a disaster. The forward line is okay. But yeah, I mean, I think Pepe should have gone. I can't believe he's not in the squad. But yeah, I mean, the midfield is probably the best part of this team with Aronson, Tyler Adams, and Yunus Musa, who plays in Valencia, Weston McKennie. So that part of the team is pretty good. But like, I don't particularly love this team. I would just be happy to get out of the group. But I think England are favorites for sure. And then, Wales are... I'm almost sure that Gareth Bale is going to score in the 19th minute of extra time to send us out in the group stage, because that's just what he does. But yeah, I mean, I don't particularly love the state of this team going into this tournament, and I'm not confident in Berhalter either, so we'll see. But I don't think anybody cares that much about USMNT that's listening to this podcast.
True. They might care about England. Gareth Southgate picked the squad. I was pretty okay with the squad. There's a couple of things, like Tony's left out. I would take Ivan Tony. I think he's great. But
I would take him, but he took Wilson, so it's not like
ultimately you are picking the player who's not going to play,
right?
Or maybe play like 10 minutes at the end of the game because
Kane's
going to play.
Kane's
going to play every single second of every single game, and if Kane is injured, I don't think it matters if you've got Wilson or Tony up front. It's a big problem for England. But I think I probably would prefer that person to be Tony. But I do rate Callum Wilson. I rate him a lot.
Yeah,
so
I like him a lot.
I'm not too worried about that. And the other one was I might have taken James Ward-Prowse instead of Conor Gallagher. But again, you're just picking a person to sit on the bench.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Sancho, because I know you're a huge fan of his.
Oh, yeah. You know, travesty that Sancho's missed out. So squad, fine. Our form going in is quite poor. Obviously, there's question marks at the back.
Is Reece James in the team?
No, Reece James is not there. So it would probably right back up a Trippier, who Trippier, to be fair, has been excellent this season so far. He won't start Trent Alexander-Arnold over Trippier. He loves Trippier, and to be fair, Trippier's a good player. Good free kicks, good corners.
Yeah, I think Trippier's also delivery. He's been good for England. He scored in the semi-final a few years ago, right?
The World Cup, in the World Cup, he said. And then we got Luke Shaw at left back, hitting form at the right time, obviously, because, you know, that's what Luke Shaw does. His form for World Cups and Euros. So, the centre-back's a bit of a problem. You've got Stones, and then who sits alongside him? If it's Maguire, if it's Dyer, if it's Cody, it's never great. Could it be three at the back, but then it's a bit...
Is Walker there?
Walker is there, coming back from fitness, so...
We know Southgate. Southgate did this with Maguire, right? Where he like sat the first match, but then he played the rest of the Euros. I think Walker will. It'll be the same thing.
What I can see him doing is starting pretty much all the group games, having a back four, Iran, USA, and Wales, because they're games we expect to dominate. But then I think he'll move to a back five after that, perhaps, especially once he realizes that Sterling's not been great and he has to take Sterling out of the team. I think he'll do that for a. Another defender, I can see that happening.
I'm worried about Sterling. Sterling looks bad. Like, he does not...
He has always turned up for England, apparently, even though I'm not even sure of that. I'm not a big fan of Sterling. I thought even in the Euros he wasn't great, and then
a couple of
dives and stuff and kind of got by. I think he will come out the team after... He'll start, but I'm not sure. He'll be in the 11 that starts the tournament, but if England get anywhere, I don't think he'll be in the 11 that ends the tournament England go out in.
Are you picking Rashford over him?
Maybe, but then I think Rashford would be good off the bench. I can see him picking Grealish over him. I can see him picking Foden over him. I can see him picking... Saka's going to be on the right. But yeah, Rashford maybe as well. It just depends on the formation and what he does. Southgate, The thing is, Southgate's inclination is to put the handbrake on. So at what point will we just go to a three at the back and just have Kane and one over up top with a bit of a clogging midfield? We'll see. I do think we'll get out of the groups. The game I'm worried about is the Wales game, obviously. Just for the arrival there, I think we'll hammer USA. That's the one game I'm not worried about. I feel like the Iran game, they'll be up for it and we'll squeak by, but I think the USA game will just be a breeze. And then the Wales game could be a bit tricky, but I see us getting out of the groups, and then I'm not sure. Once we come up against a quality team, I think that's where it might all fall apart.
Well, I will say though, the European teams, they seem weaker. They don't seem like the, you know,
no.
France is not. They don't have Conte, which is a massive problem.
Or Pogba.
Yeah, but that's fine. Everybody's used to that. Germany is not. Their team isn't particularly strong. Italy is not in the World Cup. Portugal.
Spain and Portugal really, but Portugal have the Ronaldo problem, which they will find out soon.
Spain's squad is just, oh my god, it's awful.
I quite fancy Spain for a bit of a run in this tournament, just because they'll play in the Spain way. Everyone knows their job when they come to play for Spain, and it's just regimented football. Even at the Euros, their squad didn't look incredible on paper or anything, but then they were
one
of the better teams at the Euros.
He did a good job with that.
And Enrique's a good manager, so I can see them doing a decent job. They are a bit light up front, but they've got some talented players in the squad. They've got Gavi and Pedri and whatever.
I think it's going to be Brazil or Argentina.
You'd think that looking at that Brazil squad, it is mad. We've got four players in that Brazil squad, by the way. Telles, who still is our player, lest we forget, Casemiro, Fred, and Anthony. So a win for Brazil is a win for United. Let's not forget that.
I mean, we could have three starters, actually. I think Anthony could start, and then Fred and Casemiro definitely start.
No, apparently Fred has not been starting lately, apparently.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure for who. That was what I heard, but I'm no Brazil expert. But I think they'll all get game time. We'll see them all on the pitch. It's hard to look past either them or Argentina, really. But you never know with the World Cup. Anything could happen, I guess. Although, having said that, generally, the best team has won it over the last few years. Spain were definitely the best team in 2010. They won it. I think Germany were the best team after that. They won it. Who won? Yeah, and then France were the best team last time around. They won it. So generally, the best team do somehow find a time to win. So we'll see. Who are you predicting, though? Is it Brazil for you?
Yeah, I'll take Brazil.
Yeah, it's hard to look past them. I do have a cheeky feeling about Spain. Obviously, England can bring it home, obviously, you know.
Is it coming home? I guess that's the real question, right?
I mean, the coming home meter is on about 5 out of 10 at the moment. We'll check back in with the coming home meter as the weeks progress. The other team, Denmark could do all right, you know.
I think they're going to go far. I think they're going to go far.
Yeah. They're a good unit, and obviously we've got our own Christian Eriksen being there. To be honest, if he lifted the World Cup at the end, I wouldn't be mad at that. I wouldn't be mad at that either. Yeah. But it will be good. I'm worried about the atmosphere. Generally, like, events in that end of the world haven't had the best of atmospheres. Like, you watch the boxing in Saudi, and it's always a bit flat. So you do wonder what the World Cup would be like with travelling fans, and I'm not sure that for the travelling fan, this will be the best World Cup ever. I hope the World Cup shines a light on the shit that's going on over there, in terms of slavery and not slavery. Well, basically slavery. Yeah. Let's be honest, modern day slavery.
Is Qatar a dry country?
It is, yeah. I believe.
I imagine the atmosphere will be pretty flat then.
Yeah, and LGBTQ rights as well, and all that stuff. Like, it's just not the best place to have a tournament, but it is going to be there, and we will be watching. If you are watching too, you can probably tune into us during the World Cup. We will probably get podcasts out, checking on how our guys are doing.
And you just have to hope that you just want nothing serious to happen. That's really like the main thing for this World Cup. You don't want anybody, you know. You just want it to go through and it just be about the matches and that's it. And everything comes.
I think it will. I think Qatar pretty much aware that the world spotlight's on them. They won't do anything dumb. For better or worse, kind of thing. It's kind of hiding their shit. But what I hope is when I tune into BBC and ITV to watch these games, I get to see the games, but I also get to see some actual journalism on Qatar. I remember when the South Africa World Cup happened, and that was one close to me, obviously being part South African. There was a lot of criticism at the time because that was a lot of money spent by South Africa that could have gone into a lot of other things. And it's a country with poor infrastructure, a lot of poverty. I went there a few months ago and the trains aren't even running now. The trains barely run anyway. And you've got stadiums there that are just unusable. They just sit there and they do nothing. Looked brilliant at the time, brilliant in 2010, but now they don't do anything. There's only a handful of stadiums that actually do things. And you just think, could that money have been spent a lot better? And I remember at the time BBC actually did some actual journalism when they were out there, like talking to local people about what they thought about the World Cup, what the money should have been doing instead. I mean, yeah, I've got family there who obviously loved the World Cup being there and it was a great time. And they said it was like probably the best time their country's had. And actually, for a country that has like high crime rate, again, like nothing bad happened during the World Cup because South Africa were really on it in terms of like keeping that crime rate a bit down and stuff like that. Obviously, it did happen, but not in as large waves as it could have done. So I do hope there's some actual journalism from the BBC and ITV while we're out there. And then I also hope that the football's quite good as well. Mm. We will try and talk about the World Cup. Obviously, we're not journalists ourselves, so we'll probably just stick to the football. But I'm sure you have all your own views on the World Cup as well. Feel free to share them with us on Twitter. And we know Nick from our parish has some strong views on the World Cup as well. So we might try to get Nick back on and have a bit of a debate about World Cup-y things. But yeah, we've got a lot of players in action anyway. So I think it's 16 United players at the World Cup.
Yep.
So basically just at home is Lindelof and... who was it? Lindelof and McTominay and a bunch of kids, basically. And De Gea. Just child mining, a bunch of children. So yeah, that's it for this United Hour, unless you've got anything else you want to say? Before we go, where do you think USA will finish?
I think they go out of the group stage, to be honest.
Is there a buzz in the US for it? Does anyone care?
Yeah, there's buzz for it, but I think it's like weird because this is like the time in the US where literally there's college football, there's NFL, there's NBA. It's all like happening right now. So the thing with the World Cup usually is like it's in the summer where the only sport going on is baseball. So it's like it's very easy to kind of get everybody focused on it, but that's not the case right now, so it's a little bit weird, but there is buzz for it.
And the games are at decent times, aren't they, at least, as well, so that probably will help. Just quickly before we go, just a reminder that today's podcast is brought to you by footballprizes.co.uk, where you can enter prize draws to win great merchandise, great United memorabilia. It's a great site. You can win many great prizes. And if you go there and use the code UH10, that's UH10, you get 10% off when you use it. So yeah, get yourself to footballprizes.co.uk and support the pod. And also please remember to leave us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. That's it for United Hour for today. We'll be back probably next week with some World Cup chat, see how England are doing, see how other nations are getting on as well, see how the United players are doing. But until then, cheers, Ashwin.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to United Hour. Remember to follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at United_Hour. Please take the time to leave a 5-star review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. United Hour is brought to you by the Sports Social Network, and our theme song is by Ancient Feelings. To get in touch, please email unitedhour@gmail.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.